This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning, I'm Joyce Goh. You're listening to Pressing Matters right now, the show that goes behind the headlines where we speak to members of the press on their stories. Joining us today is P. Gunasekaram, a columnist and former editor at Malaysia Kini. Welcome to the show, Guna, and thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Well, recently you wrote an article on Bersatu's move to becoming UMNO 3.0. What made you write that?
Why UMNO 3.0? I think the current UMNO is actually UMNO Baru. That is the correct term for it, because the original UMNO was actually deregistered way back in 1987. Mm-hmm. You know, when the current Prime Minister, Tun Dr. M, was facing, after a contest he faced with Tunku Rizali Amsa in 1987. We are talking about UMNO 3.0, because you already have an UMNO 2.0. No? The thing is, Bersatu is very much in the image of UMNO. It's a party where membership is open only to Bumiputras. You know? Mm-hmm. So in the sense, it has got a racial element in terms of admittance. And then you have had a move within UMNO itself, where there has been a steady move over the decades for it to become a party which is involved in patronage and eventually corruption. And subsequently, theft in terms of one MDB's money. So what we're looking at here is Bersatu Vice President Abdul Rashid Abdul Rahman, who was also the former Election Commission Chairman, saying that you should basically award contracts to Bersatu division heads, you know, government contracts, so that they have money to win the elections in future. Yeah? So it's a former EC chairman who is advocating extrajudicial measures to keep and extend Bersatu's power. So that, I think, is worrisome, and is actually a reflection of what UMNO has been doing all these years. So which is certainly something that we don't want. And then on top of this, he is also the chairman of a Putrajaya Committee on Electoral Reform. You know? So he heads the committee. Mm-hmm. And he is supposed to come up with all kinds of new laws in future to stop, to ensure that the elections are properly conducted. So is this the kind of person who should be head of the Putrajaya Committee, the head of a government committee on electoral reform? So those kind of things.
How did he end up there as the head of that Putrajaya Committee?
He was appointed by PM Mahathir.
Okay. Well, you also wrote that the only way to, you know, check and balance for this is for the other Pakatan Harapan partners to kind of speak up. Do you think that will happen, though? So far,
yes, there has been some amount of protest by others, but not from the top leadership itself. So it's difficult to know behind the scenes what kind of protest that other Harapan parties are making against the statements by Abdul Rashid Abdul Rahim. The PM himself has come out to say that it is Abdul Rashid's personal opinion. But I think in this case here, he may have to do more than that, because here's a person who's advocating publicly what is basically a criminal activity. And he is the person in charge of electoral reform. So the how are you going to reconcile the two in this case?
Yeah, and I think this same Abdul Rashid, he had been heavily criticised by both PKR and DAP. They are dominant parties in Harapan. They criticised him over his tenure from 2000 to 2008 as EC chairman.
Yes, so apparently his role as EC chairman was not particularly exemplary during this period. And then this also continues the tendency for Mahathir to appoint controversial and or discredited people to important positions. For example, former finance minister Tun Daim Zaidudin, who is a very controversial figure. He was appointed as the chairman of the Council of Eminent Persons. And then you have former IGP Rahim Noor, who infamously gave Anwar Ibrahim a black eye while Anwar Ibrahim was detained and was under police detention. So, and he is now heading security negotiations with Thailand. And then there are discredited attorneys general who have been appointed to key positions, you know, in terms of investigations and so on.
So why do you think this happens, though? Why do you think some of these people are elected into such positions, given, you know, what they've done or given their track record? They're still voted into the top positions?
Voted in this case, appointed.
They were put in.
You know, by basically the Prime Minister. So I suppose in this case here, part of it could be due to familiarity with these people. You know, I think PM Arthur knows these people from before, so he is perhaps comfortable working with them. The other thing is to show that you know, I can appoint, you know, as Prime Minister, who I feel whoever I feel is appropriate for the job. But I think in this case here, one has to ask whether these are the best people to actually be appointed. In this case, we are talking about Abdul Rashid himself. Is he a fit and proper person to hold on to head the committee on Putrajaya electoral reform? You know.
Yeah.
Putrajaya's committee.
Well, also, I think this discussion is also following your article on Bersatu's move to becoming UMNO 3.0. Do you think also, are you keeping an eye on the news that, you know, some former UMNO MPs may be jumping and, you know, they could emerge in some of these parties?
Yes, there has been an announcement of some key Bersatu people, which who have been appointed to head GLCs. So the Rural and Regional Development Minister, Rina Arun, actually appointed two Bersatu Supreme Council members and a lawyer to head entities under the ministry. So this includes Supreme Council member Sukiman Sarmani, who was appointed as the University Technical Mara chairperson, while another council member was picked to chair Mara Corporations in Diran Bahan. So these kind of things are happening, and these appointments have already, according to Rina Harun, has been approved by the Prime Minister himself. So I think the basic question is, how committed is Bersatu itself as a party to the reforms, you know, to the reform to the reforms that was promised by the Harapan ahead of GE14 in the run up to the GE14 elections, and so that's actually quite concerning because in many ways they seem to be moving back on the promises that was made by Harapan and also made by Mahathir and Bersatu officials and themselves.
Well, we're speaking to P. Gunasekaram, columnist and former editor at Malaysia Kini. After this, we'll continue our discussion on his articles, and this includes his article on ECRL. Stay tuned to The Morning Run, BFM 89.9. Good morning. You're listening to Pressing Matters, the show that goes behind the headlines where we speak to members of the press on their stories. Today, we're speaking to P. Gunasekaram, Malaysia Kini columnist and former editor at various news organisations. Guna, recently you wrote an article on Malaysia potentially continuing with the ECRL project, but in a smaller scale.
This is something that I plan to look at further. I've written articles before on why the East Coast Rail Link project should not proceed before. Just by way of background, the main rationale for this project is that it will transport freight from Port Klang to Kuantan and the other side, so that you cut the cost of sea transport around Singapore and the peninsula, so presumably to improve transportability between the east and the west, So this was a ringgit 55 billion project, but it has subsequently been quite clearly established that it's not a viable project. It has been considerably overpriced, and that there are clear elements of corruption, in this project. Also, China is providing, I think, something like 85% of the loans for this project, as well as a huge amount of labor for the project, as well as all kinds of input come from China itself. So the amount of add-on, which is local, which is from Malaysia, is very limited. So it also includes elements of covering up the 1 MDB hole, where reports say that the project has been at least 20 billion overpriced. And this 20 billion has been paid into an overseas company for which there are no details which are available. And the loan was not dispersed into Malaysia first, but directly into this company, which is based somewhere overseas. Nobody knows where. No?
Mm-hmm. Mm. Yeah, so I guess if it does resume, I mean, clear basis must be given. And how much do you think, what are you hearing when you're working on the story, how much do you think the ECRL should cost?
I think the report said that they were about 20 billion overpriced. So the cost of the project was originally 55 billion. Mm. The finance minister, of course, is saying it is something like 81 billion. But that, I think, includes the cost of interest and other things, which should not be included into the cost of the project. So if you take the original cost of the project as 55 billion, it was about 20 billion overpriced. So the project could have been done for less than that. But the main thing is, I mean, what are you going to do with the project? You build it and you put it up there. And what are you going to do with it when there is not enough throughput to actually make the project viable? So remember that there is also a pretty good highway which links Kuala Lumpur to Kuantan, which actually goes right up to Terengganu now. So why this rail project at the moment? And this is going to be something which is going to be considerably underutilized for a very long period of time.
So you think we should just do away with the ECRL? Is that what you're saying?
Yes. No. So if it is resumed, then you should explain to us why it is resumed. What are the benefits? What is your cost-benefit analysis? What is the impact on the environment? What exactly are you getting? Because, mm-hmm. I mean, it seems that this is not even a double-track project, So it's just a single line at the moment and it's costing that much. This is basically, if a project like this goes ahead, then essentially what you're doing is you're condoning corruption. So this same government has said many times previously, this new government, that there are many elements of corruption in ECRL. So why do you give the go-ahead for a corrupt project to go forward? And then the other thing is this 20 billion overpricing is said to be related to 1MDB to find projects from which you can get money to fill the huge hole in 1MDB. Yeah? Mm. So in this case here, you're talking about 20 billion overpricing, which is paid into a company, and presumably this will somehow be injected to 1MDB so as to cover that up. The other one, I think, if you remember, is the 10 billion so-called Pipeline to Nowhere project, which also involves China. So that will be about 30 billion in all, which will be enough to cover the loan losses in 1MDB, basically the theft of money from 1MDB.
Well, some news that's been coming up from ECRL is the Prime Minister saying that Malaysia may continue with it, but they're looking at it on a smaller scale. So maybe if it's viable, if you look at the numbers and it does make sense, if they can cut the cost, because I'm not sure. I remember there's some contract that we've entered into with China when it comes to ECRL, and there are heavy fines linked to it.
I think the thing is this is actually unclear. If there is corruption, involved, and pretty much it may not be too difficult to prove that there is, then the contract can be invalidated.
I see.
So in this case here, the proper person to actually deal with it is not Dime Zainuddin, who is actually holding the negotiations with China, but perhaps the Attorney General, who can actually look at the legality of the contract and give an opinion. and then see whether there is any way to actually break this contract because of the involvement of a lot of corruption. So that is important.
Could we also consider going to the international courts?
Yes, certainly. You know, it's also possible to go to the international courts and see that you can get some kind of compensation for this. So that will be the proper way to do it instead of resuming a project that we don't really need. So what's the point of it? You know, it's going to sit there. It is going to bleed a lot of money for many, many, many years to come. You know? And how do you make this project that much cheaper, you know? Mm. So what kind of negotiation is involved? So I think it is quite bad to make this entire project here very, very opaque. You know? So there's no transparency. We do not know what exactly is going on. Yeah. So, and also there is this element of maybe... considering that China is a world power, that we shouldn't irritate them too much, you know. But yeah. I think in this case here, if China was complicit in, say, a corrupt practice, then it should be held to account over this. And this is one of the things that the government should push forward hard and get some kind of compensation from China for this. You know? The legalities of it, again, I think should be investigated by the Attorney General's chambers now, as
definitely
far as this is concerned.
I think also because of the sensitivity of the whole issue, as well as you say it's opaque, so we do not know what's in the contract, what was promised, and maybe they've done, because some work has already started, right? So there's already been investments invested into it, all these things, and definitely I'm sure there's a clause in it. I don't think China's... the
amount of work that has been done is not that much, apparently, you know, but the amount of still something like 20 billion has already been apparently paid out to these overseas companies, you know, so which is out of all proportion to the amount of work which is done, you know. So why was this done, you know? I mean, and is there any way of getting this money back, you know? So if you don't get this money back now, then it is going to be a major problem. And who is this, what is this company to which this 20 billion was paid, you know, in the first place, you know?
Good questions. We've been speaking to P. Gunasekaram, Malaysia Kini columnist and former editor at various news organizations. Thank you, Guna, for your time and insights.
Okay.
That's all we have on Pressing Matters on the Morning Run today. Stay tuned for the 10 a.m. news after this, followed by Enterprise at BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.